Hello and welcome to You Awakening. This is your host, Jacqueline Johnston, and I want to sincerely welcome you. Whether you're with us live tonight or later on listening to the replay, because your energy really makes a difference, even if you're not asking a question or directly participating in the conversation. And I'm sure our special guests would agree with me. I'd like to ask you to join me in welcoming Bill Bauman, back again, one of our regulars and, if I can say this, most favorite guest. And I just would like to say that he's truly been an inspiration and a North Star in my life. We've known each other for a long time. And I think you'll see why in minutes. You know what I'm really thinking right now is I'm thinking back over the time we've known each other, and Bill, probably more than anybody else I know, really walks the talk, is really internally coherent, and as such is really an inspiration. So before I make him blush, let me welcome you. Bill, welcome.
Jacqueline, thank you. How did you know I was blushing?
Because I know you. I can just tell.
Yeah, that's right. It's so true. Well, thank you, thank you, thank you. First of all, I want to say hi and thank you to everybody here. I just, as Jacqueline was talking, I was just kind of feeling into you, if I could use that verb, and just feeling my connection with you and just letting kind of however you want me to be present to you, just inviting me. And I already feel like a part of the family. I already feel just so intimately here. And I feel us joining together. So I am really excited. But first, I want to just comment to know that I'm your favorite. That just really sparkles my trusty little heart. So thank you so much.
Well, I shouldn't say that.
Yeah. Well, Jacqueline's right. We go back a long
time.
You're
one of my favorites.
Did you know that we were in kindergarten together? That's how far back we go. No, it's not true. I'm just making it up. So truly,
well,
I
it seems like that.
It does, actually, yeah. And it's one of those sacred bonds. It's like, how fate or life or whatever we call it just brings two souls together, two beings together, for the sake of celebrating each other, celebrating life, and then of course for you and me, just allowing me in the future from when we met, just to be present, just to love everybody who's here and show up and just together let the blessings of awakening happen. Which, by the way, leaves me just wanting to express how absolutely excited I am. There's something about the word awakening, which, of course, you're no stranger to in the least. But this You Awakening Summer Series, and again, I think it's one of the reasons I love being with all of you on a regular basis. Something about the word awakening that just is so central to me. It just lives in my core. And I feel like it's maybe, as a word, and not just as a concept, but as a vitally alive phenomenon, awakening is really, I think, what life is all about. It's what the human experience is about, is that we come and then we pretend, we get birthed, then we pretend to fall asleep. And then we fall asleep in whatever way, to whatever degree. And then we wake up, and each of us wakes up in a totally different way, and to me, having kind of walked the earth like all of us have from a lot of different angles, there's not a lot that surprises me much anymore. But one of the things that continues to thrill me, kind of makes me dance inside, if you will, is awakening and just being able to participate in and witness and celebrate all the different ways that each of us awaken, and we would all use different language for what that is. We would describe it in different ways, but I think the common thread to me is, wow, we're coming alive. We're waking up. We're showing up to the bigger self. We're showing up to the bigger truth. We're involving ourselves in life, in the world, in the world beyond this world, in ways that just take not just our potential, but our nature, and just kind of opens the hatches of that, if you will, to use very technical terminology, and just allows the spirit of awakening and the power of awakening and the juice of awakening to take us over. And to me, that's the joy. It's the nature of humanness, but it's the joy of humanness. I think if I weren't in the middle of that awakening, I don't know how interesting it would be around here. So thank you for inviting me. I say that to you, Jacqueline. I say that to each and every one of you. It's a joy as we just join our whole beings together, our hearts together, as we support our awakening together.
You know, thank you. Thank you, Bill. You know, the question that comes to mind in this moment is, can you share a bit about your own awakening?
Oh, hark. You caught me off guard there. I think I probably should do that. you can tell my hesitancy. And I think the only hesitancy is talking about myself is, I don't know, whatever.
Anyway, I know, it's not
your
favorite thing.
But I'll do it keeping in mind that I'm doing it not as the metaphor, not as the way it happens, but just as one version of it. And hopefully whatever I say, it will trigger some aspect of your own version internally. So as always, I just ask you to listen to my words with one ear, but with your better ear, just listen to your own words, your own truth, your own soul, your own heart. So the other reason I was hesitating is that my awakening happened in a lot of different stages. I think I'll run through two or three, and then I'll probably stop on one. And I don't know what I'll stop on. But so it started, first of all, in my mid-20s when I awakened to love. And I really didn't know love much before that, except for earlier versions of it in my life that were not fun, that were painful, and that had a lot of issues attached to it. And so in my 20s, when I awakened to love, and it just happened, something deep in my heart just kind of burst open, not by any prompt in me. I just happened to be at a really down point in my life. But my heart opened and in effect said, and I think I've shared this story with you at other times, it just said, try me. And so I got into this intimate relationship with love, and I just let myself become love, and I let love do me, take me over, become me, and so for a long time, everything was about love, and I saw life through the eyes of love. I experienced circumstances through the eyes of love, and it was very, very, very sweet. Still painful in a lot of ways, but very, very sweet. It gave me a whole different perspective on Earth and humanness than what I had had. Then many, 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 many years later, I didn't open, the vast world of spirit opened itself within me. So first love jumped in, then the whole realm of spirit, the whole realm of light, the whole bigger dimensional field beyond the three-dimensional world just started coming alive within me. And note, I didn't try for any of these. I didn't even know they were coming. And it started calling me to bigness. It started calling me to vastness. It started calling me to an identity beyond the human three-dimensional one. And again, even though I resisted that for about 2 years, I mean, I really fought it because I was just at a point in my life when I was starting to enjoy being human. and sure enough, what happens? You know, you get to that point, and then it all falls apart. Darn! You know, where's the justice in it all? So anyway, so I resisted it, but I finally just again let go, and all of a sudden I'm realizing that maybe the theme here this evening is letting go, but I just let go into it and literally soared, and it's as though those bigger dimensions, as though the light field, if you will, of it all, just lifted me into itself, lifted me, lifted me, lifted me in ways that I had no background in, But I just became this passenger on the invisible bus ride through the universe, through infinity, through light, through bigger dimensions, and just became in awe at the bigger creation, and in that started realizing that oh my gosh, this whole three-dimensional world that we feel cut off in, that we feel almost deserted in, that we feel so alone in, is really intimately connected to this. And that's what started happening, is my three-dimensionality started to get intimately connected to the bigger dimension. And so for me, from that point on, life was always about the total dimensionality of everything. So no matter what was going on dualistically, three-dimensionally, in my mind, in the world, rather than seeing it primarily through dualistic eyes, right, wrong, good, bad, etc., I saw it in ways that almost cannot be put into mind-centered words. I saw it as this kind of expression of the divine, just kind of flowing and working itself out and expressing itself and putting itself into all these forms in ways that a three-dimensional mind just couldn't quite get to. And then I'll do one more, but it goes on from there. I want to talk about oneness. From all of that, I just got launched into, and note again, I didn't do the launching. I, human person, Bill, I just got launched into this deep, deep, deep experience of the oneness of everything, to the point that the duality was almost a bother. Where I'd look through dualistic eyes, or I'd be talking with everybody, and of course everything's dualistic. It's right or it's wrong, or it's fair or it's unfair, or it's good or it's bad, or whatever it is. It's positive, it's negative. And I found that I had a difficult time going there, because that perspective, all of a sudden, it felt so narrow. It felt so choking. It felt so difficult, because especially in my heart, I could just begin experiencing, oh my goodness, we are all one. It's not just everything is interdimensionally connected and we are connected, but we're one. So it's one thing for me to say, gee, I feel connected to you. I feel a loving bond with you. It's another thing for me to say, and this gets into the mystical realm, it's another thing for me to say, wow, you know, I really am you. And I think most of us have had some experience of that, some version of that. It may come and go, or it may be a very faint or a very infrequent kind of a happening, but it's like where we just sort of lose ourselves, or lose ourselves in a different person, or lose ourselves in another reality, but never really lose the self, because we can always come back to this seeming individuality that we are. But we enter this realm of bigger truth, if you will. This bigger truth where, wow, we're one, but we're the same. I am you and you are me. And somehow, as I'm with you, I'm looking at a mirror of me, maybe a mirror of the me I haven't yet met, a mirror of the me I don't know, a mirror of the me that seems not to have your qualities, but since everything's in here, in me, you're an expression of these qualities. And so from there, I started recognizing that, wow, anything that I might resist is really resisting the truth of me. And anything I might want to push out of my world or say no to, maybe because it's uncomfortable or it hurts or someone's trying to abuse me or the relationship, I'm really pushing me out of me. And, of course, what that does, what the bad news of that, Jacqueline, is I run out of excuses for my life. I can't blame anybody anymore. It's awful. But anyway, I could still feel sorry for myself. But no, that's a bad joke. But really what it was is showing up to, wow, if I'm one with everything, and let that take me to the max, take me to the ultimate sort of gold medal level of that, then we are one, but we are each other. And frankly, as I'm sitting here talking with us, at one level I'm aware, gee, I, Bill, am talking to you. But really, at another level, in a bigger reality, if you will, we're talking to ourselves. And so what I do, for example, what I did for the last amount of time before this call, is I just sat there and I opened to each and every one of us. And I just, for maybe 20 minutes, I just kind of let you be me be you, and I just let sort of drift up into my cognitive space, into my awareness, what it is that we want to say to each other. And I feel like I'm just being the voice of all of us to each other, or each of us to ourselves. And that's why when I give any kind of talk, I never really think in terms of, gee, what would I like to say? Or what do I feel like is my truth that I'd like to impart? I just go to, oh, what's the truth of the moment that I'm about to show up to? And how can I serve that truth? How can I be the voice of, the energy of, the light of, the transmitter of, the expressor of, the embodiment of just that truth of that moment? Because it's a sacred, sacred truth. So your truth right now is ultimately sacred. And if in any way I'm expressing anything that reflects it or triggers in you what you're really deep down wanting to say to yourself, then that to me is just the most sacred role, role, that I could play in life. And so one more thing, back to your question, you probably were just thinking, oh gee, let's ask Bill the one thing, but oh no, he goes on and on. So there was oneness, and then I'm just going to pick one more thing. And the one more thing is that from all of that, at the end of all of that experience, just being one with everything, there was this tangible message that came to me that in effect said, Bill, this is all beautiful, and now it's time to take that into the primal depths of humanity, of human beings, of your humanness and of the humanness of everyone else. And of course my trusty little conscious mind said, huh? What? Because I didn't fully understand what that meant. But here's my sense of what it meant. And this may be a little unusual. It may not be. I'm not sure. But for me, it was like there I was in this, really, let me just call it blissful state, if you will. And if I'm to be really, really one with everything, then I need to be one with that, let's just call it downside of duality, with the dark side, if you will, with the negative, with the hurt, with the pain, with the primal scream, with the whatever. And so I just got pulled into what I, after a while, started calling the primal human nature. The primal nature of all of us. That's a facet of us that, oh, according to psychology, sort of lives in our unconscious, our personal unconscious, our collective unconscious. But here was my new task, my new job, to take oneness as it lives in every dimension, in every way, and for me personally to be totally one with and to be everything that people hate. Everything that triggers fear and terror and hurt and pain. And I'm not trying to be melodramatic here. Trust me, in my life it felt a little melodramatic. But after a little bit, I found myself just being in utter love. A love with abandonment, a love without self-protection, a love without a need to save myself from, be in denial of, run from any of the stuff that most of us just don't want to face. And it, frankly, just speaking personally, it was one of the greatest gifts of my life. It feels to me like it completed my own personal human journey, because I wasn't in any way floating in the positive in order to avoid the negative. Floating in the light in order to avoid the dark. Because I brought that light, I brought that divine, I brought that oneness into what is spooky, where the boogeyman lives, all of that. But here's what happened. What happened to me is after a while, the boogeyman stopped looking like the boogeyman. Dark stopped looking like dark. It's like what space quantum physicists, scientists say about dark matter and dark energy out in the universe. It looks dark on the surface, but once they start investigating it, once they start seeing it up close through new telescopes, in other words, like once they put it under the microscope, there's amazing light in there. So I went into dark, I went into evil, I went into pain, I went into to primal scream, and literally, and this befuddles the conscious mind. This makes no sense to the conscious mind. It's counterintuitive. And literally, just by spending time there, being one with it, letting go into it, and again, not protecting myself from any potential hurt, I found myself falling in love with the downside, the underbelly, the dark side, the hurt and the pain of humanness. And so what was there, just to close out this description, what was there for me was just this deep, deep, compassionate, loving, embracing, if I may say it, unconditional embrace of the human condition, every part of it. And in that, the dark side began to mesh with the light side, and evil began to mesh with good. And it's interesting, quantum physics has a theory about that, that their theory is that you take any two sides of a spectrum, like they would say, like take matter and antimatter. They're on two sides of the center of the spectrum of life. And if you put equal attention on both of them, like maybe, you know, 10 seconds on this side, 10 seconds attention on that side, that what happens over a little bit of time is they start coming together. And then they meet in the middle. It's a fascinating kind of a thing. They meet in the middle, and what happens, what's the scientific word for that is collapse. They collapse into each other. And at that moment of collapse, they instantly morph into what spiritually we would call a unity or a unified field, what in science they call into the quantum, if you will, or the zero-point field. So they come together, and there's unity, there's being. And that was my experience with, let's just call it, the dark side of life. And to me, I was kind of mind-blown, if you will, because... and you can look at your own mind in terms of listening to this. It's something our mind can hear, can kind of understand, can grasp in a certain way. But really, really, just from within the parameters of the mind, it doesn't make sense according to our trained mind. But for me, it happened. And so from there, and then I'll finish this and actually be kind enough to turn this over to Jacqueline. Aren't I such a nice guy? So
you're
from
in a world.
There,
keep going.
From there, I just settled in to being a human being in a way that started feeling pretty much the same as being a divine being, that started feeling the same as being a light being, that started feeling the same as being an interdimensional being, or an earth being, because, again, in oneness, it's like we're not just all related and connected, and we absolutely are. We are all of that. And so for me and me, just to put the icing on the cake of the question, Jacqueline, about my awakening, I think the part of it I deeply appreciate is that through it all, I got led to places that I had no clue were even possible, places that I had no idea I ever had a calling to, places that have served me just personally as the source, if you will, the source of what I feel to be the truth, just the truth of creation, the truth of Earth, the truth of us as human beings. And it left me feeling like gee, you know, it really is possible to live on this precious earth in peace. And with that, I'll just turn that back over to you. Thank you. I am reticent to talk about myself, except as a mirror to somebody from some of my experiences. And I thank you for asking the question and pushing me into it, you pushy person.
What are friends for?
Exactly.
You know, I think that question came from a sense that, you know, we've all been on a journey, and I think this community is rather advanced in the awakening process and can relate a lot to what you're saying. But I also thought that a feeling sense of your experience would come through.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I'd be curious if if people felt a sense of resonance or truth or identifying or the opposite. Feel free to just drop us a note. Use the Q&A section on the bottom of your webcast page if you're listening via the internet to just send in a note. We'd love to hear from you. And we are open to some questions, although we're asking tonight not for them to be of a personal nature, but, you know, of a broader nature about the awakening process. So definitely please feel free. You know, Bill, when you were talking, and I think it was the second stage that you mentioned, and we laughed a little bit, is, you know, the amount of personal resistance.
Mm-hmm.
A couple years' worth. And we know that so much of getting to the place of allowing yourself to be led involves some surrender and willingness.
Yes, yes.
Can you talk about that aspect?
I'd love to. Maybe I'll start with my resistance. And I'm going to make the point, I think, that I really appreciate all the resistance that I've given in life. I feel like I have been, to use the word, I have truly been the reluctant Messiah. I have probably resisted up until maybe the last 10, 15 years. And I'm old. I've been around for a while. But up until then, I have resisted every step along the way. And I think what it is, and these words won't even begin to say it, is that deep down, I just wanted to come here and I wanted to hide. I wanted to hide in myself. I wanted to hide from life. And spiritually, for whatever reason, put a past life connotation to it or whatever, I wanted to hide from being a spiritual leader. I wanted to hide from the responsibility of it. I wanted to hide from all sorts of aspects of it. It was something I felt like I had an allergy to. And so every time there was another urge, another drive, another awakening, my first response was to fight it, to be miserable. So in that time I talked about, where the light just invited me up, I fought that and I fought that and I fought that, because part of it came with certain gifts, and there was like a gift of healing. No, and there was a gift of vision where all of a sudden I could see certain things. No, and as I said, I was just getting really comfortable being human, or hiding in the middle of being a normal, regular human being, which, as a hideout, I was having a really good time with. Did that really fulfill me? No. but you know how the psychology of it works. So for me, it was each of these steps of awakening was a bit of a torture. I really felt, I'll use the word God, and I recognize that has so many meanings, but it felt like God or whatever that is, just I couldn't hide anywhere. Kept finding me, and then saying, "Okay, let's do this," and I'd say, "No," but then when I walked through that and realized in all sorts of ways that my no was just not going to be accepted, then I did give in. So back to your point and your question about surrender. I think surrender is one of the most important aspects of qualities of ingredients in awakening. And I speak this not as an authority on surrender through most of my life, but as an authority on the other side of that. I think the reason that I so respect all that resistance, all that fighting, all that primal scream of no on my part is that I really, through that resistance, I got to witness personally the power of infinity, the power of divinity, the power of, what's the word I'm looking for, my destiny. And I got to see how the weak, frail human me, even when I tried to be strong and get on my horse and do it my way, just fell apart. Just fell apart. And it gave me just immense respect for the power of spirit and the power of my spirit. So just to say that one way, maybe for us, and again, I don't want to sound preachy here, and I think with my sharing about how I resist it all the time, you'll get that it's not preachy. But at least for me, let me just go back to the last 10 or 15 years, if you will. I don't even question anymore. I don't even do the why question. So there's the next level of awakening, and it's even beyond what I've described. I've gone through at least a few other awakenings from there, but it doesn't even occur to me to resist or to even have a debate about it, or to even look at, gee, does this conform to what I want? Because, frankly, there's no I want in there. And I feel like at this point, through that letting go, through that just sort of diving into or falling into is a better word, whatever the awakening is in that moment, that something so much more powerful than who I've been, where I've been, comes to the fore, no matter what the emotional experience of it is. And it does the awakening. So I feel like the reason surrender is important is that it's probably the only human ingredient that we can contribute to the process, because nothing else we do seems to have anything. It's all grace. Awakening to me is a total act of grace that just enters into the depths of our humanness and just rearranges our humanness. Sometimes through a big death, tomb, and resurrection process, the old self dies, and it's a very painful death. But somehow in it, we survive, hang out in Nowheresville, that's the tomb, death, tomb, resurrection, and then we awaken, or grace awakens us. I had the real privilege of spending about 4 hours this morning with a person. People come and have the misfortune of spending time with me. And this person had that misfortune this morning. But the cool thing about this person was that this person for a few years had been dying in the way we're talking about it, not literally physically, but whoever she was just letting go, letting go, letting go. And it was a very painful, traumatic kind of a death of the ego, if you will. And just earlier this year, in a state that she described as absolute bottom line depression, just a poof, kind of overnight, after a few years, whoever she was just was gone. Just disappeared. Was gone. And all of a sudden, it was like, oh, well, look at that. I'm not here. Interestingly, right about the same time, she shared with me, this is adorable, you'll love this story, her identity was stolen. Amazing. Her driver's license, credit card. So who she was disappeared on the outside as well as on the inside. But back to the point, it's like she died. And then there's been awakening since then, these last few months, who she really is. And so she and I spent some time. Her question was, who am I? I don't know who I am. So we filled in the blanks of who this new self is. And by the time she left, she really got it. She had it. She felt it. She experienced it. And our time together with her own, if you will, formal initiation into the awakened self. And as a part of that, that death of the ego, whoever she was, whatever she was, and she was on a real pain track in life. I mean, it was, her life has been extremely painful, and her path had been a lot of healing. And she felt like, well, you know, I'm sure that's still there, but later I said, no, I don't think it is. But I don't feel like I need to heal anything anymore because I'm a whole new person. So I think I'm going there because what she finally did is she surrendered. She spent probably the first two of those few years really trying to make things happen with it, and she just surrendered. And that's about, I think, all we can do. But it's the most important something to do. So if there's any of us who are trying to be in control, not that you would be, you know, I was, but you're better than I am. But if any of us who are trying to be in control, trying to protect ourselves from the process of letting go of the old before we fill up with the new that's happening, or just trying to resist that, deny that, run from that in any way, through whatever coping mechanism, maybe, I don't know if these words mean anything or not, but just think of it as surrender. Surrender. What if I would just let go? Could I? Which is one question. Could I just let go? And then whatever the answer to that is, would I? And gee, will I? And maybe right now, is there some decision about that that's just kind of rising out of the inner being, the inner core of who we are, that's all about, let me just let go. And let grace do the rest of this, and recognize that part of the reason I'm resisting, part of the reason I'm trying to be in control, is that that's the part of me that's needing to die. And I hope the word die or death is not offensive to anyone. That's the part of me that needs to let go, so that can be replaced by the bigger version of me, the bigger truth of me, the bigger light being of me, who really no longer needs that tool. So thank you. That was a beautiful question.
Thank you. I think you gave some real hope and encouragement to a number of people. You know, we receive a lot of emails, and I love that. And so many have referenced struggling for quite a period of time and like, when does it end?
yes.
And yet at the same time feeling close to the finish line, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
also having glimpses and short period of time of just, you know, expanding into that oneness, you know, living from the center of being, and then feeling a sense of being triggered again. And perhaps the difference makes, you know, is giving an awareness of the gap. And in a sense, it's more painful rather than perhaps seeing that, you know, it's in the process of really opening and being able to hold, you know, the space that you've talked about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. I love what you're saying. And if I could just comment on it a little bit from a slightly other perspective. When we go into that gap, which is a beautiful, perfect word, I think, as you say, it can be painful. It's not for some people, but for roughly 99% of the people I know, it's painful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's one person out there, at least, for whom it's not painful. It is painful. And here's just a perspective, just in hindsight from my life and from the life of so many others. I think in our awakening, there are two things that are happening. One is what we call the good news, which is we're freed. We come into this bigger space. We awaken to the light. We awaken to the truth of our nature. We awaken to the truth of life. etc., and on and on. And the other is that we're mentored and tutored indirectly by the light, by spirit, by our soul, etc. We're tutored in how to let go of the ways that we hold on to duality. So for example, pain. Now, please hear this, what I'm about to say, with your heart as much as you can, and a little bit more with your heart than with your mind. So sometimes we go through this pain, the pain of letting go, the pain of that gap, the pain of the death of the ego, or how, whatever word we want to use. We go through the pain as a rite of passage. And the rite of passage is that if I just surrender to the pain and sort of let the pain be the pain, just like I was saying about the quantum physics of, you know, two opposites, they come together. If I just let go into the pain and I stop being in the story of the pain and I just let myself, let the allergy I have to the pain, have break out all over my skin. I'm just being ridiculous and metaphoric, but just go with it. Then what happens is the pain gradually stops being painful. So which says that the main reason most things are painful is because we're primed, trained to perceive them as painful, interpret them as painful, and therefore experience them as painful. As you believe, so it is. In other words, our beliefs act out and we get the exact experience of our beliefs, even if it's a subconscious belief. So for us to surrender even to the process which is painful, and even to the pain that is in the process, is I think part of the training. Now it's silly to say spiritual training, but maybe it's not silly. It's part of the sacred, beautiful rite of passage that doesn't feel beautiful at the time. It feels horrendous, and I can personally attest to all of that. So interestingly, I want to. A funny thing happened on the way to the forum today. So there I was walking to the forum, and a friend sent me an email, and it was one of those a person I'd helped, and it was a thank you email, and she quoted a Zen master of the 6th century. She had one line of a poem that this Zen master had written. And she said, I finally, with your help, I finally get the truth of this line. And the line is, the struggle between good and evil is the primal disease of the mind. And I never heard that. And I'll repeat it. It's an amazing line. The struggle between good and evil is the primal disease of the mind. And I thought, whoa, it's one of those things, you know, like when something just like kind of reaches out and grabs you by the collar and demands that you do something with that. So all of a sudden I felt like, oh, you know, in a little bit I'm going to be talking to all these amazing people who gather around Jacqueline. And it feels like there's something here. So she gave me the link. I went to the website. This is it's entitled The Early Zen Poetry of Sengtsan, Seng-Tsan. And he lived in the 6th century. He was the third patriarch of Zen in China. I don't know that. I'm reading that because I found out today. I don't want you to think I'm really that smart. and what he did is he kind of married Buddhism, Zen, and Taoism. And so would it be workable? I've got about the poem goes on for like 40 lines, but I highlighted about 6 of those lines, and I would love to read them if it's okay.
Please do.
These lines are at intermittent points, so they don't follow exactly. The one I read to you is the 2nd of the line. So it goes like, it's called The Mind of Absolute Trust, which I think goes to the surrender that we're talking about. So it goes like this. If you want to realize the truth, don't be for or against. Then next line, the struggle between good and evil is the primal disease of the mind. Another line. The more you think about these matters, the farther you are from the truth. Mm-hmm. Isn't that adorable? The more you think about these matters, the farther you are from the truth. Then the next line, step aside from all thinking, and there is nowhere you can't go. Another line, don't keep searching for the truth, just let go of your opinions. And to me what that says is when we stop the search, especially the mental search, then the truth is just right there. It just starts to show up. And the last line is, the mind of absolute trust is beyond all thought, all striving. And I was kind of blown away by the whole 40 lines or so, but I just wanted to pick those out because in a way that I didn't know what it was going to relate to as we were talking, it felt like my friend sent me that because that was a little gift to us, and a gift to me too. I just am deeply touched by that. If I could translate it just a little bit. I feel, and this really mirrors my journey. There's a whole mind part of my journey that I did not share here at all. But just to comment, if we look in our minds, I think one thing we find is we find a mind or a self that is a thinking self, a thinking part of us, that really, really tries hard. I mean, gets A++++ for effort, A++++ for motivation, and we'll look at achievement and accomplishment with a different grade, I'm sure. But it just loves us so much, is so dedicated to us, that it will do anything within the confines and within the tools that it has in the mind to make sense out of things, because the mind is a make sensor. That doesn't make sense. But that's one of the roles of the mind is to understand, to grasp. And the mind tries, and the thinking self tries so hard to help us on our journey, to help us in our awakening by helping us understand. And then from this more Zen approach, how fascinating to hear, step aside from all thinking, and there's nowhere you can't go. And that the mind of absolute trust or surrender... Wow. Is beyond all thought and striving. So there are two things we find in the mind. One is this total dedication and commitment, which, frankly, when I look at people's minds and look in my own mind, I'm sometimes just blown away with the purest love. I think it is so exquisite. And so any ways we might badmouth the mind, I think need to look at how the mind is a devoted servant. And then, of course, the other part is, and this is the difficult part humanly, is that the mind can only understand to a point, to the point of three-dimensionality. There's a glass ceiling on our three-dimensional thinking content that if we stay in that mind trying to find the truth, this is where Sengsan, whose poetry we just read, has such a point. It's like we can't get there. It's like the old, I love this analogy. This somebody told me this about a year and a half ago. So a guy driving out in the country, he's trying to get somewhere, and he can't find the right road. So he stops by this farmer's field. He sees the farmer, calls the farmer over, and he says, I'm trying to get to such and such a place. The farmer just looks at him, says, well, I'll tell you. You can get there, but you can't get there from here. and I think that's the story of the mind when it comes to awakening. And so when you talked about surrender, and I just picked up the ball and ran with it, I feel like this letting go, this surrender, which was implied in my story, which I was not a good model of for a long, long, long time, is maybe the gift of this hour together. Maybe our all-knowing soul, maybe our all-wise heart, and notice my words, knowing and wise or wisdom, because in the mind it's about it's about thought and options of thought, and it's about cognitively organized thought. In the heart, it's about the wisdom of life. In the soul, it's about the deep truth, the pure truth, the wondrous truth, the divine truth, the uncluttered truth, the unified truth of it all. So if we can let go of all that effort in the mind and invite our mind as a new job description to become an observer of, a witness of our heart and our soul, and just get its own intuitive sense, right brain, intuitive sense of, what is that wisdom? What is that heart's love-filled, love-propelled, love-motivated vision? What is the pure truth of the soul as I sense it, as I know it, just because in some quantum way the soul takes that pure truth, which is a non-defined truth, and just, boom, inserts it right in the middle of the mind. So even to invite our hard-thinking self, our computer-like mind, to let go, surrender, but to surrender to the heart, surrender to the precious, precious soul that from the first minute of our togetherness, I've been feeling, for whatever reason, feeling the souls of each of us. And I say that because my feel is that through whatever words are being expressed here, it's your soul that's speaking. Speaking a little bit through me, a little bit through Jacqueline, but speaking to you, and maybe speaking to your mind, maybe speaking to your body, maybe speaking to your instincts, maybe speaking to your memories, maybe speaking to your intuition. But I felt like, we're here. All of our souls are alive, and we've got some kind of soul agreement that our souls are in charge of this. And our souls are inviting us to our awakening through letting go, through surrendering. And then maybe more specifically, surrendering to this sacred, sacred truth in your soul, to this love-grounded truth in your heart, to this dependable, trustable truth in your spirit. And then I think your mind can, over a bit of time, or maybe right now for some of us, your mind can look at that, and in its own logic, it can bring itself to the bottom line of saying, oh, I get it. I can help not by working harder, but by working smarter. Not by trying harder to find the answers, put it together. Because again, what was that line? The struggle between good and evil is the primal disease of the mind. Or I could change good and evil. The struggle between opposites. Is it this? Is it that? Trying to make those distinctions, trying to understand through all of that categorizing of thought is the primal disease of the mind. So then invite our minds, as our minds get filled with the truth, with the wisdom, to just let go into it and learn how to teach itself how to support that truth, how to express that wisdom. And that, I believe, at least in my experience, is what the mind absolutely is capable of. So if I go back to my story of my awakening, it's like I found, oh my gosh, I went miles, I went millennia beyond what I ever dreamed I was capable of. And the same thing, I think, is true of our minds or of our thinking self. Once we let go of our linear modality of thought, once we just let go and trust that heart, trust that soul, trust that grace, trust that light, trust that divinity within us, or whatever the language might express, if we do that, then our mind is freed. And for many of us, when our mind is freed, we're freed, because the mind is so often the last holdout, if you will. So our mind is freed to literally awaken. And I've watched minds awaken. and I watched the glass ceiling over the mind shatter, just like a windshield shatters when a rock hits it. Shatter, and I watched the glass fall, and then I watched this open-aired space into what we tend to call our higher consciousness. And I watch our mind's energies just float up into that higher consciousness, and I watch the higher consciousness come down into our mind, and I watch that same unity, the unity of the three-dimensional mind and the bigger dimensional mind, if you will, or the divine mind or the absolute mind or the light mind. And it's all available to us, and our human three-dimensional mind can participate in that once it is freed. And notice I'm talking about it, the mind, as though it's separate from you, which of course it isn't. But it's a beautiful, deserving to be respected and loved and honored facet of you that deserves its own awakening. And in receiving the gift of awakening, the greatest thing any of us can do is give our mind permission to surrender, which is maybe because of its learning is not in its daily repertoire, but it's totally capable of it, just like we are totally capable of it. So, just in closing, I am in awe of you. Not just the you that is already awakened, but the you that is pretending to not be awakened. And it's a pretending that is very convincing. But it's just a pretending. And awakening, in a sense, is, to me, like it's like waking up from a dream, waking up from sleep. In a dream, we're pretending a whole scenario. And then in the scenario, it happens this way. And we wake up, and all of a sudden, it's the end of the scenario. And we're in a different reality. And there is a good friend of mine named Arjuna Ardal. You all maybe know him.
Yes, I know him.
Yes. And he wrote, several years back, he wrote this, to me, amazing book called, The Translucent Revolution.
Yes.
The Translucent Revolution. And you've read it, Jacqueline, I take it. And to me, what it does, among other things, is it talks about this is the age of awakening. Translucent, the light just awakening us. And that's the revolution, sort of the 2012 revolution, the post-2012 revolution, if you will, in this age of light, this Aquarian age, where light is the tool, the vehicle, the expression of grace that just is here to awaken us. And in the book, and this is the point I want to make, and I apologize for going on, but in the book, he cites numerous, scores of examples of people, regular people, like a gardener, a riveter, somebody just stepping off the bus, who just spontaneously awaken. And, you know, we hear stories like that here and here and here, but he put it all in this book in a way that left my mind saying, oh my God, look at that. This is our age. We're all here to awaken, whether we know it or not. So the reason I just shared that little story about Arjuna's book, if you will, is I believe because because you are awakening. And I just happen to put the focus on your mind, my mind, our mind, because your mind is an intimate part of this awakening. And in a sense, maybe there are just enough of us here this evening who are saying, yeah, you know, if I could let go of the way I think, let go of the beliefs, the assumptions, the paradigms, the theories, the stories, let go of the stories that move my life and just let grace create the next stories. I think there may be enough of us whose minds are there, and maybe I just was moved by grace to talk to your mind and say to your mind, you know, your liberation, your freedom, your awakening is as important as the awakening of every other facet of this beautiful person that you are a part of and that you are. And if you would but decide, decide's a good mind word, decide to surrender, to let go, and turn the baton of power, turn the locus of control over to the heart, to the soul, to the spirit, to the light. That heart, that soul, that light will not only take over, but it will invite you into the bigger truth. It will invite you to share in, taste, touch, feel, and be taken over by that bigger truth. It will give you new tools, tools to take that bigger truth and serve it, express it, honor it, and not just make it central, but become that truth yourself. So that you as mind are no longer just a three-dimensional mind doing three-dimensional thinking, but you are a bigger dimensional mind celebrating the truth, living the truth with just as much joy as does the heart. And I say that because we have this assumption that the mind is more like a computer. It doesn't feel much, but my experience is you, this mind, have enormous capability of feeling joy. And so as we get ready to close, I am so honored to share the story of my awakening and to place it on the lap of your heart, so that not just in this hour, but whenever a memory might trigger part of this story to come back, that it would be a reference point for you. And not perhaps an exact reference point, but a reference point that your soul could take, your heart could take, and just show you your style, show you how to surrender, where to surrender, show you how grace wants to just all on its own, just because, wants to help you awaken. Thank you so really, really much.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill. Do you feel complete, or is there a little meditation coming through?
Actually, I feel like we just did it, the meditation.
That was my thought, too.
Yeah. No, I do. Frankly, I feel, from a word point of view, I feel very complete. Frankly, what I'm watching, just in the sort of the inner vision that I'm allowed, what I'm watching is not just the words, but the spirit of those words, the personalized invitation of those words to each of us. I'm watching the energy of that, the light of that, just fill us and stir us and move us, and I don't think that needs any more words for that to be supported.
Beautiful. So shall we lovingly say goodnight?
I think that sounds like a winner to me. On my end, to say goodnight, first of all, Jacqueline, thank you. You and I adore each other, and thank you not just for our years-long relationship, but for what you do and who you are and how you do it and the ways you show up to the world and the gift you give to every one of us who is here on this call, again, either live or visiting and tuning in later. So thank you. You are just exquisite, and on behalf of all of us, I just thank you for the gift that you are and the gift that you give. And then to everyone, to say good night, to say goodbye, is a little bit of a superficial thing, but it's the words we have. And so in those words, I really want to just wrap my invisible loving arms around you and not do a chokehold on you by any means, but just support you, love you, honor you, and let whatever is my presence, whatever is my spirit, whatever is embodied here in this space called Bill, whatever that is, just to be there in love of you, in support of you, in whatever way is just right, just perfect. And so the little human voice of me is saying goodbye and thank you so much for such a thrill and such an honor to spend this time with you. And you're stuck with my spirit.
I almost want to say, don't say those things. Bill, thank you. From the depth of my heart, thank you for who you are and all that you share with us, the inspiration that you've been tonight, and for being a blessed pillar in our community.
Oh, thank you.
And I'd also like to thank everyone who's listening either now or later on in the replay, which will be just as powerful. Tune in to all of us present here now live, for we will be together. There really is no such thing as time and space separation when we're in energies like this together. So much love, and until the next time, good night.